I learn a lot more about us by the questions that we ask than the answers that we give. I learn a lot more about us by the questions that we asked. I had the opportunity to do a wedding this weekend, another wedding. It's a gift of this position of mine to be able to do wedding ceremonies, and I end up doing a lot in Loudoun County. There are a lot of folks in our community who probably couldn't get married by a lot of the ministers here. I did a same-sex union, same-sex wedding now in this county just this weekend, and it was a gift. A lot of folks, when they hear about how many weddings I do in this community, they ask me this question: have you ever done a wedding that shouldn't have been done? Have you ever done a wedding that shouldn't have been done? Are we a morose people? Interested in the macabre? The dark side of things? Why do we ask that question? I think it is much deeper than that. We as a people are fascinated by the difference between the ideal and the real. And weddings represent that chasm between the ideal and the real. Just look at all the pictures that we do for weddings, trying to look as perfect and pure and beautiful as possible. I send on my wedding questionnaires that I send to couples, I ask the question, what makes you the most scared about this wedding? What makes you the most scared? When I first put this down, I thought I'd hear answers like, well, being married to this person for the rest of my life. But instead of that, what I hear is tripping on the aisle on the way down, or crying so much that I mar my mascara. We want the weddings to be this pure, perfect thing, as if life could be that way. Weddings are rituals. They symbolize our highest expectations for our commitments. They're supposed to be pure. We're made up of 70% water, as our reading shared. But not even the water that moves through us is pure. No matter how many filters we use or bottles we buy, everything of this earth is complicated and muddled and imperfect. Water, weddings, relationships, all our various rites and rituals. A colleague posted this about ritual on Facebook a few days back. Ritual at its essence should be wholly organic, imbued with meaning by its participants. It need not come with a price tag. It is something we as a species do quite naturally. The heart should be the only intermediary. What does he mean when he says ritual? Well, this, of course, this Sunday morning thing that we gather for and work through together, singing, listening, speaking, candle lighting, he also means weddings, memorial services, and so on. The heart should be the only intermediary. Good luck with that. Some say that worship shouldn't be planned. We should just show up here, and whatever happens, happens. Well, that would be pure something. Did you know that there are air bars where you can sip the air of your choosing? Water bars, water shipped from the deepest, purest wells. Drink there, breathe there, and you will be forgiven your trespasses. Wiped clean. Which reminds me, give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. I grew up Protestant and I imbibed these words like water, like a pure, clean glass of water. I let them enter my being, let them get mixed up with the water of my life. And lead us not into temptation. If you know this, say it with me. But deliver us from evil, for thine is the kingdom. There are different versions. I only know one. I can't tell you what joy it gives me, honestly, to say those words with a congregation, especially when I visit the Congregational Church of North Branford, where I first learned to put those words together, one after the other, staring at that dirty red carpet and those strange stained glass windows with their odd figures and colors. Why? Why the joy? It is wholly imperfect. I don't believe the theology, honestly. I find it paternalistic. With its God the Father, why not Mother? Why not Earth? I find myself wrestling with that. I find it somewhat imperialistic. It talks about building a kingdom on Earth. There's trouble in there for me. It's a ritual that doesn't satisfy my intellect at all, but somehow it satisfies my soul. How can this be? How can something so imperfect quench that need? As Rumi shared from our reading, the water dirtied by the city is still the same water turning dust to clay, making the planet verdant, even though disagreeable things have been mingled with it. Paul III, this Paul's son, visits this congregation like I do my home congregation in North Branford. And this is his sermon. He won this one at last year's auction, so he got to tell me what to preach about. And he came up with the title, You Don't Choose Who You Love. He knows the ways that imperfection mars purity. Perhaps Paul III has a similar experience when he returns here to this congregation as I do when I return to Connecticut. It's not perfect. This space of ritual, it isn't pure. But something of it still turns dust to clay. Paul III would have wiped this service clean, removed all the mold and cobwebs. He wanted joys and sorrows and a sermon. That's all. That's it, he said. Can I get that? I said, you didn't pay quite enough. But these are the rituals he understands, the pieces he connects to in our worship service. But ritual, like love, is imperfect and complicated. And we all connect to it at different points. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses. Forgive us all those announcements you didn't want to hear. And these, there are trespasses. I performed a wedding once, where I had serious doubts. I performed one once where I had serious doubts. I'd met with this couple for a long time. We had wonderful counseling sessions. I saw the two of them as connected deeply, joined together in this act of relationship. I saw them as strong, complicated but strong in their relationship. And then came the rehearsal. We were down in Charlottesville at Barbersville Vineyard. And by the time folks showed up for the rehearsal, they had imbibed a good deal, and they were rather late. And as we moved through the ritual of the ceremony, I noticed that the father of the bride was staring at me and mumbling under his breath and saying hateful things. He hated me. Or perhaps he hated what I stood for and what that ritual stood for. I couldn't tell you why. I don't know why. Then the wedding day came. And I went to visit the bride in her chamber and talk with her before the ceremony, and she was quite drunk. She was stumbling, and it turns out her father had given her something to calm her down, and so that had made it worse. And I pulled her aside, And the father protested, said, "You're not going to talk to her." I said, "No, I really think I am." And I said, "Are you really ready to go through with this? You don't seem ready to me." And she started mumbling something about some other guy that maybe she shouldn't get married today. And I reminded her of all of the conversations that we'd had. And I said, "Are you ready?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, I'm ready." And she wasn't quite there. And then I left and I went to the groom. And he was standing proud and dignified and calm and ready, with tears of joy in his eyes for what was about to come. And my heart broke. I performed that ceremony. The bride stumbled to the altar. But you know, they're still married. They have two beautiful children. I see their Facebook posts. They're filled with joy of their lives together. They support one another through trouble and trauma. And they're good. I don't know if it'll last. I don't ever know if it'll last when I perform a wedding. I think that one will. I hope it will. This is a strange business. A strange business we are in, an imperfect business. Where love, even love, that which I will claim has the power to heal, to save, even that mingles with impurity. We are 70% water. The water that washes through the city, collecting the dirt and refuse of life, it is still the same water turning dust to clay. There is a chasm between the real and the ideal, between the ritual and the reality, between that which we want love to be and that which it is. That chasm, it breaks our hearts. "You don't choose who you love," says Paul III. We don't choose all the refuse that mingles in our beings, that dirties, complicates, confuses our lives. "You don't choose who you love. Proximity makes choices for us. The need to be with someone, anyone, makes choices for us. Sometimes the choices we think we made for love were made for other reasons." Wait, don't we have free will? The power to choose our own path? A dear friend was expressing to me the other day her belief that we have the power to create our own reality. She said, "Just think positively. You can make the world that you want to live in. Just think positively. You create your world. We all have the power to create our world." And I thought about that for a second. And I said, "Would you say that to a famine child? Would you look into the eyes of a child starving with a bloated belly and say, 'You have the power to choose your own path'?" The freedom to choose is not a given. It's a privilege. That famine child has almost no privilege of choice, and there are many in this nation that have a whole lot less freedom to choose than perhaps we do, and perhaps some that even have more. Freedom is not a given. And nothing and no one is ever fully, absolutely, purely free to choose. That's what I believe. Paul III chose this sermon topic, right? Or did it choose him? Paul sent me a plethora of topics to choose from. All were worthy. I asked that he make the final decision. He chose this one, or did he? Reverend Scott, my husband, and I often ask ourselves, how the heck did we end up choosing one another? I don't mean that as a jibe. We laugh when we say this. it's obvious that we are very different human beings, at least on the surface. But by asking, we are affirming that the choice was a strange one, but one we are still willing to keep making. One of the things I say to nearly every wedding couple I counsel is that they're not making one choice. If that's all that was necessary, marriage would be a cinch, right? Make this choice and everything will fall into place from this point forward. Amen. Right? That's the way it works, right? Just say I do and it's over. If you're in a love relationship, you take on a responsibility to make a choice again and again until the point when you decide you need to make a different choice for yourself or your family. You make that choice every moment of every day. I came home from kindergarten one day so upset with life, depressed at my prospects. I looked at my mom and I said, Mom, I guess I'm going to have to marry Carmine Granucci. She said, what, dear? This is kindergarten. Well, he was the smart kid, and I saw myself as the other smart kid. So it was obvious I'd have to marry Carmine Granucci. My life was set from that moment forward. But you know, my last name isn't Granucci. It'd be fun if it was. It's really fun to say. Freedom isn't absolute. Just like water that runs through the cities, freedom is molded by our pasts and by our present circumstances. What is it then? Why am I not married to Carmine Granucci? Freedom is what we find in a moment of pause. The pause before action, the breath where we wait and say, he's not going to be my husband, and move forward. There's a pause that changes us. Maybe not all of our choices, but it changes us. We have the freedom to choose us. What will you do next? Really, I'm asking you. What will you do next? I bet that there's a choice that's waiting for you, one that you've been wondering about making. There's a decision, a next move, a chance to go one way or another. Bring that to your mind. Let it settle with you now. If there's one, let it settle with you. Let that choice be with you. Roll it over again. Look at it from another angle. Perhaps the decision seems to be made already for you. The water has run through the city. It is no longer clean and pure. You've made decisions like this before. You could easily keep doing what seems inevitable. But breathe. Pause. Feel that space of your freedom. Let it change you. That's your choice, to pause. Amen.